Okay. Hi, everyone. That's very quiet. Seems very quiet. Should be okay, though. All right. Takes a second to get set up with Zoom. Okay. Hope you're enjoying the half snow day. Okay, so last time we're talking about the multi-level page tables. We're gonna start with that and then go into our next topic. All right. I will try to look at the Zoom chat if anyone wants to put anything there. But we'll see. All right. Okay. So let's start and kind of jump back in with a multi-level page table question, kind of get things flowing again. So there's a few exercises. I definitely encourage you to walk through those as you're sort of studying for the exam and preparing for the homework on virtual memory. Let's do one to sort of start the class here. So in this example, we're doing a two-level lookup. And so you can see the parameters there. Virtual address is 10 bits, physical address 6 bits, 16-byte pages and 2-byte, this is important, 2-byte page table entries. Now we're given the format of the page table entry here. So we can see the most significant bit is the physical page number, 2 bits, then we have a valid bit and rest unused. We know where our table starts. And so the task is translate address 0x376. So let's take a couple minutes, 3 minutes. Try to work through this. It's okay if it's still kind of a sort of work in progress. And we'll go through the steps. Let's see if you can translate this address. Right. So that may not have been enough time, but hopefully you were able to get started, or at least sort of figure out what are some of the steps, where can I start? So let's walk through this. So remember, our goal is we have our first level page table where we know that where that is, right? That's at address 0x10. We want to find the page table entry somewhere within that. That's essentially building up a treasure map, right? Because that tells us where to go next, right? Now there's some other page table located in physical memory. And then we want to do a lookup in that table to figure out where our actual physical address is. So to start, we need to start by looking at our virtual address and basically breaking that down into its parts. And so this is, it's really important to start with converting this to binary, because we need to look at sort of individual ranges of bits. And oftentimes, they're not going to map to multiples of 4. And so our hex digits won't correspond to pieces of our virtual memory lookup. So to do this, we look at this in bits here. So we have 6, which is 0110, 7, 0111. That gives us 8 bits. We have a 10-bit virtual address. So we have our 2 remaining from the 3, 1, 1. Okay. Now we have our pieces. So we can break this down. We have our lowest 4 bits are going to be our page offset. Why is that the page offset? Well, we have 16 byte pages, right? So 2 to the 4 is 16. So we know our lower 4 bits are going to be for the offset. That means we have 6 bits remaining. We can break that down into 2 groups. This is going to be our virtual page number 1 and 2. All right. So now we're going to take our first virtual page number, which is 110. That's going to be our first lookup, right? So we were in our first page table up here. We need to do our first lookup. 110 is 6. And so we need to offset into our page table. However, right, we want to make sure that we're not just using this number directly, because remember, our page table entries are 2 bytes. So that offset is the number of entries, not the number of bytes. So we're gonna have to multiply that by 2. And so then we get 12, which is 0xc. And so that's gonna be our first index lookup. Now, where does our page table start? Well, it starts at 0x10. And so our actual address is going to be 0x1c. You can find that in our physical memory diagram here. And so the first page table entry we need to look up is ACBC. So if we do this access, we get ACBC. Now, that's not our sort of full physical address. Why? Because we're doing a 2-level. We have a 2-level page table. So again, that's just sort of the next step on our journey here. This, we have to interpret according to our page table entry format. And that was described right here. So we need to, again, we're always sort of going to convert to binary. A is going to be 1010. And then C, B, and C, right? So on and so forth. We really just need these first 3 bits. So the format, our page table format was described. So the first 2 bits are the physical page number. And this third bit here is the valid bit. Well, lucky for us, in our first look up here, the entry is valid, so we can continue. So now we have our next physical page number, which is 10 or 2. Now, where does that lead us? Well, remember, this is a page number, not an address. And so this is telling us which page we want to look at. Well, our pages are 16 bytes long. And so if we multiply this by 16, we get our address of 0x20. Okay, so that's our next page to look at, which happens to start here. But we need to look at for our, not just that page, but our page table entry. So how do we do that? Well, we have to go back to our virtual address. We're now looking at our virtual page number 2, which was 111. So 111, that's 7. Again, our page table entries are still 2 bytes, so we still need to multiply that by 2. So that gives us 14. In hex, that will be 0xE. Now that's our the location of that page table entry. And so we have to look at the correct page. So remember, we were at address 0x20, we have 0xE, and so our next lookup is going to be 0x2E. Okay, so that gives us the address of our next page table entry. We can go ahead and do that memory access. 2E is going to fall sort of here. So we're going to get this EF F0. Now, again, that's a page table entry, so we're going to parse it like we did before. E is going to be 1110. The rest, right, we don't really care. We have our top 3 here. So we still have our valid bit as 1, which is great. 2 is going to be 0x, sorry, 2 binary bits. It's going to be 0x3. So that's our physical page number. So we know we're going to be looking, sort of starting somewhere in here, because we have to multiply this by 16. So we get 0x30. But we weren't looking for the start of that page. We were looking for the actual address. We have our page offset. So we go back to our virtual address. Our page offset was 6. And so our final address is going to be 0x36. And so that's our answer. So we went through the first level of the page table, second level of the page table, and found the actual address. And that happens to be in the physical memory that we have shown here. So we have 3, 4, 5, 3, 6. So our actual byte that if we were to sort of access that memory location would be 0xDB, but the actual translation is the physical address is 0x36. So the steps aren't that different from a single level page table or from a 3 level page table. We just sort of keep applying the same techniques. And so it's sort of the key here is really thinking through this algorithm of breaking down the virtual address into its parts and then being able to look up, where's the first page table entry? Now that I have a page table entry, how do I parse that? Where does that send me now? Okay, now I go to my next page table, look up the next page table entry, however many levels there are. And at the last level, we actually get the physical page number of the real lookup, and then we can find the correct address. All right, so Zoom isn't the most conducive to questions. Of course, we're happy to discuss this more in office hours if we can help. And like I mentioned, there are a few other examples. You can see this one's number 5, where it's, I think, a good exercise to see if you can walk through it without looking at the answer, and then look at the breakdown and sort of check what you did. All right, question. Why don't you need to add the base table entry size in the second lookup when you have OX2E? So we did include the page table size. So we looked at our physical page number. Let me change colors here. So we had our physical page number was 2. And then we had to take into account the size of the pages by multiplying it by 16. That got us our sort of the byte address of the start of that page. Now, this is not sort of, this page is sort of located at a fixed place in memory. So the 0x10 is just sort of the starting point for our first page, because we have to just kind of know where that is. But once we're there and we're looking at the page table entries, that's kind of providing our map. And so this 0x20 is sort of the start of that next physical address, the physical page. And then we do our offset using our virtual page number. Right, so the base table register is really just to get us started. Because without that, we wouldn't really know where to look, right? So that just kind of has to be known. But afterwards, all of the addresses are given in the page table entries. Right. Okay. And so, like I mentioned, the slides have this breakdown here, kind of walking through the steps, like I did. All right. Okay. So, virtual memory kind of leads into our next topic, which is going to be caching. And so, caching is kind of the next piece in what I'm calling our toolkit. And this isn't everything we've talked about, but just to try to kind of refresh, sort of see where we're going, where we've come from, what we've seen so far, right? This isn't everything. But we're building up components. So remember we talked about how do we access sort of system resources that we want to control, which process can access? Well, we do that through system calls, so the operating system can mediate, and then we had a mechanism for user ID and permissions. We wanted to be able to share the CPU and access I/O resources, and we can do that through exceptions and context switches. We talked about where processes come from and being able to implement the shell operations that we've used in shells. We talked about that API. Virtual memory is a key tool in allowing us to have multiple processes that don't conflict with each other. Now, that's virtual memory is not the only tool, right? Things like exceptions helped as well. But this idea that we can have separate address spaces is really important. And then page tables allow us to make that efficient. But if we think about what a page table lookup is doing, is we're going through memory sort of multiple times, right? We have to look up one page table, then we have to look up in another page table, and then we finally get to the actual place we want to find the address of. And so these memory lookups can be expensive. And so caching and we're going to talk about caching sort of multiple times in this course, is a way to try to hide that performance penalty from our programs. Make programs actually run faster by being strategic how we design the hardware. Okay, I think maybe I'm a little quiet, but I hope people can hear me. Nobody's messaged so far. All right. Okay, great. Wonderful. So remember back to the sort of first day of the class, we were looking at a processor. Now, an old processor, but some parts of this have changed, but a lot of the design elements are still relevant today, right? And the breakdown here, the area-wise, right? So this is like a photo of the actual die, kind of broken down by what the different pieces are, essentially what the transistors in that location are for. Small amount of it was for the registers, right? We've looked at those. But then if you look at where the area goes, it's into caches. So we have our L1 cache and L2 cache. And so actually, we dedicate a lot of physical space, not to really the computation part, but really more to the memory subsystem. Now we have other caches which are going to be sort of separate, not shown here, but we have these sort of tiers of caches before we get to main memory. And so we've been talking about virtual memory lookup, translation to physical addresses. We've been sort of thinking about the physical addresses live in main memory. And that's true, right? That's where that address space is. But there's a time and performance penalty. And so sort of give a kind of ballpark sense here. To access a register in the CPU is very fast. To go to the nearby L1 cache, also pretty fast. L2 cache, fairly fast. L3 cache, again, still pretty good. Once we get out to main memory, now suddenly that latency starts to jump. And so the intuition here is if we don't want to sort of pay this time penalty, right, this is 100 times faster, or more than 100 times faster, right? And so if we can keep our accesses and handle our data sort of early, right, in this pyramid, that's going to hide a lot of penalty, a lot of latency penalty, if our program doesn't have to go all the way and wait for main memory to retrieve whatever data or instructions it's using. And so while we've been sort of thinking so far that, okay, if I do a physical address, if I use a physical address, I'm looking up in main memory, what a CPU, modern CPU, is doing in reality is something much more like this. Or whatever code is running on the CPU, accessing sort of local state like registers, very fast within that, the sort of processing core. If we want to read a particular address, we're first going to go to a cache. And if we're lucky, if we've designed the system well and our program is cooperative, we'll be able to read the value there. But if not, we can always go back to sort of either main memory or another level of that cache hierarchy. But sort of the key to all caching concepts is that when you learn something, you kind of make a copy of it. You want to save that information somewhere. And so when we actually do the lookup, we're going to get whatever the data that's stored there is. We're going to keep a copy of that here in this cache. And then, of course, we're also going to complete the memory, right? So the read, the memory access has to return. OK, great. So we give it the value. But if this happened before with, say, 0x1234, Right now, that request doesn't go all the way out to main memory because it was stored in the cache. Right, we kept a copy of that. And so this is a canonical technique in computer science to hide these really expensive operations if we can just do it once, in this case, the memory access, store it somewhere that's easier, faster to look up to access. Then if we get the same request later, we don't have to go through the trouble and the sort of expensive operation. Again, this time reading main memory, we can just look it up in our cache. Okay, so that's our idea. Now what we really want to talk about today is how to make that possible. So remember, our goal here is to hide that penalty of going all the way to main memory. And so if that's 100 times worse, well, we can hide that if most of the time, and so this is going to be, we're going to call this our hit rate. So if 99% of the time, we get a hit, which means that the thing we were looking for is stored in our cache. Now we get that sort of really fast access. However, our cache sizes are limited. We're going to measure cache sizes in kilobytes and megabytes, not gigabytes or even terabytes that we might measure main memory these days. And so there's a trade-off here. We can go we have much better performance, but we have smaller capacity in our caches. Or we can have main memory, which is very large, but is slower. And so that's why we have this hierarchy. That's why we have this pyramid, so we can have sort of performance and capacity, right? Get both of those goals. One other note right now is just that the key here is also this is an improvement in hardware, and so we're going to hide this from the program. Right, programs aren't going to have to think about caching. They're going to do memory accesses just like they always have, and the hardware is going to accelerate that through the caches. One of the reasons that caching can be really effective is we can think about how programs normally operate. And so we have a couple properties of locality which we can exploit with our caches. So if a program is running, and it accesses some memory location, right? This could just be a variable in the program. There's a decent chance that if it accesses it once, it'll access it again, right? And maybe it'll be accessed again multiple times. And it's probably gonna happen at nearish the same time, right? So that's gonna be temporal locality. So if we access something at one point in time, we'll probably there's a chance we'll access it, and maybe a good chance we'll access it again in the near future. Another type of locality is spatial locality. So if we access one memory address, there's a decent chance we might access the memory addresses nearby. And so our cache design is going to sort of take advantage of these properties. To sort of see this as an example here, let's look at a relatively simple piece of code here, right? So this is just a function computing a mean. So let's think about, right, so and this is just basically a loop, right? A program we would often write. And there's actually a couple examples of both temporal and spatial locality happening here. So first, think about the actual instructions, right? The machine code that makes up this program once it's compiled. That's stored in memory. And if you think about how this program is going to access those or need those instructions, right, we have a loop. Right? So we're going to run whatever instructions the compiler generates for this loop, we're going to execute those multiple times. And so we access the instructions once, and then we go and access them again and again and again through this loop. Also, because this is just one function, we expect that those instructions are going to be stored in memory sort of nearby each other. So we get not only temporal locality because we're accessing the same instructions and running them over and over, but also spatial locality because we're accessing instructions that are sort of next to each other in memory. But that's just the instructions themselves. If we also think about what data we're accessing, we see the same kind of thing. So for temporal locality, right, we access this total variable. We also access I. And we're going to access those over and over and over again, right? Because we're updating total on each iteration of the loop, and we're updating I on each iteration of the loop. So we access it once, and that's not the last time, right? We come back. Every time we run the loop, we come back and access that same variable. And then also, because we're reading this array, right, our array of values, we're accessing the first element of the array, the second element of the array, the third element of the array, and so we get that spatial locality as well. And so a lot of programs sort of exhibit this behavior. They're not doing sort of very random, sort of all over the place memory accesses generally, right? There's code will generally sort of operate on kind of the same data for a period of time, and caches can benefit from that. However, right, if you think about that, so we saw the same types of locality, but one was with our instructions, right, and the other is with our data. But if you think about where these are likely to be stored in memory, these two things are probably not close to each other, right? Our instructions are probably stored in one place, and then the sort of allocated memory for doing like our stack or other variables is probably somewhere else. And so we actually want to split these two things. And so we'll have a separate instruction cache from our data cache. And we'll see kind of why that's useful sort of as we go. We think about the implications of having a cache which is much smaller than the total amount of memory we might want to access. And then just one note that this is going to be sort of at the local level, the L1 layer here, right? We have the split. When we get to the L2 caches, then we'll have them sort of joined and there's more sharing going on. And this isn't sort of, doesn't have to be designed this way. This is a common design for this. Okay, and we talked about kind of why generally these are in sort of separate areas and we don't want them to sort of conflict. Okay, so that's kind of our setup here, right? We're gonna hide the latency. We're gonna try to keep data close. We're going to try to keep data both in time and space nearby so we can access it quickly. What does this look like? Well, we can walk through an example. This is a nice sort of simple example. So we're going to have our memory, right, shown here on the right, okay, like we've been seeing. But now we're adding a cache. And where's our cache? Well, it's right here. Right, this is our cache. So it's not very big, right? But we have our one block cache. So we made a decision, right? Our first sort of design decision was we're going to have all of memory. We're going to divide it into blocks. How big are the blocks? Well, they're 2 bytes. Now we have a cache. And we're going to be able to store one block in our cache. All right? So that's sort of our initial design. Because this is, again, this is going to be fixed in the hardware. So the hardware designer, the system designer is going to have to basically make a decision about what this cache is going to look like. So that's going to be our cache design. So how does this work? Well, again, we want to be able to take memory accesses and potentially access them from the cache. So if we walk through an example, let's say our system's executing and it wants to read a byte at a particular address. Okay, normal operation there. Now note that these addresses are all in binary. So we want to read this address. Okay. Well, that shouldn't be a problem. Now remember, we want this to be fast, right? And so ideally, in the good case, we'll be able to read this directly from our cache. If we can, great. We can get that value sort of very quickly. And if we can't, well, that's okay too, because we have memory, we have a copy there. So if we take this address and we try to say, okay, let's read it from the cache, right? We're gonna kind of run into a problem, right? Which is, so right now we have this sort of stored in the cache. I mean, the value there, if we were to read from the cache, we'd just read all zeros. First question is like, is that what we should read? Right, is that even a value? Now, with sort of the slide view of this, right, where we kind of have this like global perspective that no real system would have, you know, we could sort of glance at the memory, right, and we could look at that and go, you know, there's no memory that's storing 0000. So to us, that might look like, well, that's clearly not a value, but our computer system needs to know that too. And so to track that, we're gonna have to add an extra bit. Maybe it's not too surprising at this point, right? We saw that with page table entries. We need to know, is this valid? So we're gonna have one bit that's gonna specify, is this block in the cache valid or not? Does it represent a real value that's actually represented in memory? Okay. Is that enough? Right, because again, remember, we're trying to read this. So right now, right, it's zero, invalid. So no, we can't just read that value. We're gonna have to go to memory, right? We can look up, where is this? 01011. So that's sort of matches this address. Remember, our sort of cache block size is 2 bytes. So we're gonna read, right, that block together and put that in our cache. So remember, on the first read, right, the cache isn't going to be valid, so we're going to have to go to memory, pull that in, but now we want to save that copy, and aha, now we can mark it as valid because we know it's a faithful copy of memory. So this is better, but there's still something missing here, right? Because if you think about this, we have one entry in our cache, right? We have one block, yet we have many memory address locations, right? And if we sort of took this as the whole memory space, right, we have 2-byte blocks, so we have 4 bits. So we have potentially 16 different block addresses, yet we only have one block in our cache. And so our question is like, is this the right block in the cache? So is this value from the memory address that I want, or is it from something else? Right, so we can't lose that information, right? It's important that we be able to actually use this address. And so to handle this, we're gonna have what's called a tag. And the tag in the cache is the bits of the address, which are gonna specify where this value, where this block actually came from. Now, our lowest, least significant bit, which is 1, right, that's gonna specify which byte in our block. So since our block is already 2 bytes, that bit is sort of handled. And so we just take the upper 4 bits as our tag to specify that it was sort of this block that's in the cache. And so now we have a very small, but sort of a usable cache, because we can store one block. We know which block we're storing. We can use it to access. So if we actually want to sort of finish this this lookup here, right, we use our lowest bit to get the second byte in our block. We can read that right out of the cache because we loaded it, and it reflects what was actually stored in memory, which is great. So these are sort of the essential pieces. Need to know whether the block in the cache is valid and what memory address it maps to. All right, you know, this is a good start, but probably don't want to store just a single block, right? That doesn't give us sort of much ability to exploit those locality the temporal or spatial locality properties. And so we probably want to have a slightly bigger cache. And so we can kind of build on this idea, the intuition we got from our one byte cache, and build it up to something slightly larger. And for now, we're starting with what's called a direct mapped cache. And we'll see what that means, but essentially it means that every location in memory has exactly one place in the cache where that block could be stored. And we'll see why that is. All right, so we're doing our same setup with our block as 2 bytes. Right, so same as before, except now instead of having just that one block we can store, now we have 4. And so what does a read look like in this situation? So if we want to read our same address here. Now, because this is direct mapped, there's exactly one place in the cache where if the memory, the data that's stored at this address is located in the cache, that's where it will be. And so we can identify each of these blocks in our cache, right? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, right? We can identify those with a number, right? From 0 to 3. And we're gonna call that our index. So you can see we just have index 0, 1, 2, 3 corresponding to each block in our cache. Now again, because this is direct mapped, that means there's exactly one place in the cache where any memory address could be. And so we're just gonna identify that based on breaking down our address. So we have our lowest bit, which is going to be for our index into the block, just like before. But now we have our next 2 bits. That's gonna correspond to the index, right? So you can see that mapping here. If the next 2 bits are 0, well, that goes in the first row of the cache. If they happen to be 0, 1, that goes in the second row, right? And so on and so forth. Eventually, because we have a memory space that's larger than just 2 bits, we're gonna repeat. And so we get down to this entry here, right? All the green entries are all gonna map to that first row in the cache. The second index would be the exact same, just with sort of different places in memory, right? If the bits are all 0, 1, they go to the second entry, and so on and so forth, right? And so we can kind of color code these to sort of show that wherever we are in memory, we know exactly where that's gonna end up in the cache. Now, how do we do that? We do that with these sort of 2 bits here. So this is kind of nice, right? We take this read at this address, we just have to look at those 2 bits, and that will tell us exactly where in this cache we wanna look, right? So for 0, 1, well, we're gonna look here. Now, we still have the same problems we had before, right? Which is we need to know, is what's stored in the cache actually usable? Right, is it valid? So we're gonna have to add valid bits, just like before. We just need to know valid or not valid, so that's a single bit. It's gonna tell us if this is actually a value or not. All right, let me pause here for a second. Okay, so actually let's go back one slide here, if I can. Okay. So we get a question about why these two bits? Like, how do we know it was these two bits? And so that's going to be, essentially, that's convention. It's going to make it sort of easy and going to help us as we have more complex caches. But basically, we're going to break down our address. We're going to start with the lowest bits. So in this case, it's just this one bit here, are going to be the index into our block. Now, because our block size is only 2 bytes, we only need one bit to do that. Is it the first byte or the second byte? We could have a longer block, right? We could have a 4-byte block. Now we would need 2 bits. And we'll see these equations in a second here for how we sort of break down this address. Now our next bits are gonna be for the set, for the sort of row or the index here. And depending on the size of that is how many bits we're gonna need. And then we're gonna continue from there. And so it's not really chosen at random. It's sort of as we start from the lowest, the least significant bit, and use the bits going to the most significant bit. All right, so we have our valid bit. Okay, great. Now when we do this read, we're gonna look up, right, our 2 bits here for our index. It was invalid, so we're gonna have to fetch. Memory is gonna give us the actual value here. Now we can insert that in our cache, mark it as valid here. Okay, great. But, right, we still, even though we now have multiple slots, right, multiple rows where we can store data, we still have multiple memory addresses which map to the same location. And so what that means is we still need a way to keep track of, well, exactly which memory address do we have stored in the cache? And so we're still gonna need a tag here. And our tag is basically gonna be whatever's left, right? So whatever is remaining, in this case, it's 2 bits. And so now we can tag that block that's stored in the cache with 01 so we know which memory address it was actually. All right. And so now we've expanded our cache to have multiple entries. Still need to track if it's valid. Notice our tag size has changed. Why has our tag size changed? Well, essentially because some of the bits have gone to the index, and now the remaining bits are just 2 for the tag. And this is important, because every bit we have to store, that's just sort of this metadata. Right? If you think about it, like a valid bit, a tag bit, right? That needs to be actually stored in the physical hardware, but it's not data. It's just metadata that helps us keep track of if this is the right data we're looking for. So it's using physical hardware resources, but isn't actually storing what we want. Our program doesn't want that. It's helpful, right, because it enables this cache, and that's great. But it's still storing extra data. So we want to minimize that so that we can maximize storing the actual values, because the value is what we really care about, right? That's the data our program is actually using. And so we really want to be able to minimize extra overhead like tags and valid bits, because that's just going to use up hardware resources that we could otherwise be using for values. And so that's why if we can get away with it, right, if we can, some of the bits are encoded in the index, which is sort of our lookup into this cache, then we don't need to make copies of those, right, because we already know that, right? And so we want to make our tag as small as possible. All right. just pause for a second if anyone's typing.
If I may ask.
Sure.
So, if for some reason, like, the amount of bits was changed, would that, like, create any difference in terms of, like, how specific the, like, indexes and tags could be? And, like, would that provide any benefit or no?
Yeah, so what happens if we had a larger address, right? So let's say instead of 5 bits, we had a 6-bit address. So I'll just add a 1 to the front here, right? So like if this was our address, what would happen there? Well, our cache design, let's say that's fixed in hardware. So we still have our 1 bit for the index, or sorry, 1 bit for the block offset, apologies. We're still going to have our 2 bits for our index because we need 2 bits to look at our 4 entries into the cache. And then our tag is going to be larger, right? So any leftover bits are going to have to go towards the tag. And so instead of storing a 2-bit tag, we'll have to store a 3-bit tag. Okay. All right, so we're building up our cache here. We started with our just one block. Now we've got 4 blocks. We're going to call those sort of the number of those blocks rows or sets. And in the future, we can actually change how much is in a row, and we'll see that in a little bit. But just kind of a note on the terminology. You might hear me sort of refer to it as a row or a set. And so we can formalize this a little bit more. As we move from 1 block to 4 blocks or 4 rows or 4 sets, right, you see kind of the pattern of how that shifts, where we have to store bits, how many bits are used for which part of the cache. And so if we sort of generalize this, we can generalize this into a tag index offset. So those are going to be the key components, and then the breakdown is based on the actual structure of our cache. So first, we need to think about how many bits we're allocating for the index into the block, right? And that's going to be based on the size of the blocks, right? So if we have 2-byte blocks, then we're going to need 1 bit for the offset, right? And if we have 4-byte blocks, now we're going to need 2 bits for the offset. And so that's because sort of 2 to the first power, 2 to the 1 is 2, so that gives us our number of bytes in a block. And if it's 4, then we need our 2 bits there. And so we're going to have our 2 bits in this. So in this address example, it'd be 1, 1, right? And that's going to let us specify if we have our block that's 4 bytes, like which byte. All right. Going from there, right, the next piece is the number of sets. So depending on the number of sets is going to change how many bits we need for the index. So if we have 4 sets, we're going to need 2 bits. If we have 8 sets, we're going to need 3 bits. If we have 2 sets, we need 1 bit. Right, we can see that here. So if we have our 4-set cache, 2 of the bits are going to be to which row do we want? If we have a two-set cache, well, now we just need to determine, is it the first row or the second row? And finally, if we have, say, 8 sets, well, then we need 3 bits. And again, so the equation here is going to be, right, 2 to the power of 3 is equal to 8. So that 3 is the number of bits that we need. So this is the kind of math that we've been doing essentially sort of all semester, right? thinking about how many bits do we need to represent given the size of whatever our resource is. Okay. All right, we covered that. Okay, and then our last piece is the tag. Right, and this is always just gonna be whatever's left over. Why? Because we need to resolve any ambiguity. So we used some bits for where in the block, some bits for which row or set, and then because memory, we could have sort of multiple places in memory that could map to that same set, we need some way to distinguish which one it is, and to do that correctly, we're gonna need to use every other bit in our address. So the tag is whatever's left over. Right, so we can see that here, right, when we had sort of a larger number of sets, that means we had more bits for our index, which means our leftover tag is a little bit smaller. All right. Okay. So now we're starting to build up kind of the intuition on how we have, or sort of how the sort of property, the physical properties of our cache correspond to the bits that we need for different components of our tag, index, and offset. We can also compute our total cache size, right? And so remember I mentioned that we care about data, the actual valid data that's stored in memory that we're replicating, making faster in the cache. That's what we care about. We don't care about all this metadata in terms of our cache size. The metadata is important for correctness, so we can actually implement this. But we don't want to include that in our cache size because it's not actually what the program, what's helping the program. And so now if we kind of capture all of this, right, our number of sets, capital S, we're gonna need 2 to the S, lowercase s bits to reference those. Same with our blocks, right? Our block size, so the number of bytes in a block, 2 to the lowercase b, where lowercase b is the offset bits. We'll use lowercase m to be the number of bits in our total memory address. And so kind of, it follows here that if we take the number of bits we have for the set, number of bits we have for the block, whatever's left over, right, as sort of per our definition, that's gonna be the tag bit size. And if we take the number of blocks that we can store, or sorry, number of bytes we can store in a block times the number of sets in our cache, well, that gives us our total cache size. Because again, that's the useful storage capacity. Now this does sort of apply in the simple case where we have this direct map cache, because there's only sort of, every memory address can only go into one spot. All right. All right, so let's go to the next slide. We'll do sort of a quick exercise, kind of, again, using this intuition and these equations. And let's take, I'll just introduce the example here. So here, we're imagining a particular cache. The cache has 128 sets, 64 byte blocks. Remember, our equation, as we multiply those together, that gives us our size of the cache. So the first question is, what's the breakdown of tag, index, offset for a 32-bit memory address? And then which addresses are going to end up in the same block? So let's take 2 or 3 minutes. And if you have other questions, you're welcome to send them to the chat and I'll come back to them after we go through this exercise. All right. So if we break down a 32-bit address, our offset, so the offset is the number of bits we need to index into the block. If we have 64-byte blocks, we're going to need 6 offset bits. Index is the indexing into the sets. So if we have 128 sets, we're going to need 7 bits for the index. And what does that leave for our tag? So 32 minus 13, 22, 19. Is that right? And then if we look at the blocks here, so if something's going to be in the same block in a direct mapped cache, that means that they have to be the same index. And so what we really care about is looking at those index bits. So if we have 001, 0000, 0011, 0111, right? 6 bits for our block. And then 7 bits for our index. So if we look at these, we're going to have that. That and then the interesting bits here, so 0001, 0001 offset and index, we keep going 0010, 0011, and then this last one, 0100, right? This is all the same, same, same. And so this last one here, right now, the index has changed, right? Because now we have a 1 in that lowest bit. So this is going to go to a different line. So these ones will be the same. And this one will be in the next index. Right. Okay, so far we've seen sort of cache design, how that breaks down to different addresses, how that maps the different sort of bits, the equations for calculating the size of the different bits in our direct map caches. The next thing we want to think about is how are these caches going to operate in practice? So for this, we're gonna imagine sort of an access pattern. So imagine here that a program is running, and as it's running, it's accessing memory sort of in this order. Right, so we're not showing the instructions of what's actually doing this, but let's just say we're observing the memory accesses, and this is what we see. Now, because we have, and we're gonna assume that we have this cache design over here, right, 2-bit blocks, 4 sets. Now we can see what's going to happen as these memory accesses occur and whether or not they're going to be served by the cache. So first we can break down our sizes here. Right, we have our, so we have 2-byte blocks, so we have 1 offset bit, 4 sets, we need 2 index bits. If our address size is 8 bits, that leaves 5 bits for the tag. Right, and this sort of matches our index that we're seeing here. And we can sort of highlight those to kind of illustrate where in the memory address these different pieces are. So what's going to happen when we look at this first axis here? Well, we're going to look up the index bits, right, which is 0, 0. Right, we can look at that correct index, and then what do we see? Well, that entry is not valid, right? So no matter what else, that's not going to help us, and so we're going to have to go to memory, access that value. Now, because we did that work, we want to be able to reuse that, so we're going to save that in our cache. To do that, we need to update our valid bit. It's valid now. And then we're going to put in our tag, because that's going to identify which actual memory address is stored in this particular set. But our cache was a miss. And that's sort of always going to happen when the cache is initially empty. Now what happens? We can look at the second lookup. Well, this is going to be more promising, right? Because our first, the index at 0, 0, well, now there is something valid. The tag matches. And so we can go ahead and just get that lookup right from the cache. So that's good. Get a hit. If we keep going, right? Our next lookup's at a different index. It's invalid. So we're going to have to go to memory to do that. We'll save that in our cache, mark the tag, include the actual data that we read from memory. But of course, we get a miss here. Now, we can look at this next address. This is another one right here. So here we have two bits for our index. This is at address 0. Or sorry, this is at index 0. We're going to have our... Sorry. Okay, where was it? So yeah, so we look at our index bits. It's two bits for our index. That's 0. Hey, look, it's valid, but the tag doesn't match, right? So while we have an entry in the cache, it's not the entry we actually want. And so we're going to end up with a miss. And we're going to go to memory to actually service that, and then we'll store that in our cache, right? And so we overwrote the old values, and we store the new values with the new tag. We keep going here, we get a hit, right? Because this one we could look up in the cache, which is great. We go back here, okay, now we're back to that first entry. It's valid, but the tag doesn't match again, so we get a miss. And then finally our last one here, well, this is a new entry, it wasn't valid, so we're gonna get a miss there as well. So we did, a little bit, right? We got a couple hits, so we saved going to memory here and here. But look at what else happened, right? We had a hit here, and then we went to the same block down here, yet it was still a miss. And so this is a conflict, right? We had a cache conflict here because we were using the same set for multiple parts of memory because our index bits were the same. And so when we did that in between, we actually evicted the entry that we could have used later for this other data that we never actually used again in this axis pattern, causing us to now have to go back to memory again. And so this is one of the downsides to any cache, but particularly a direct mapped cache, where we only have one location to put every memory. So if we get something that aliases the same location, we have to evict what was there, even if in a few memory accesses it would be beneficial. All right, we will pick up there next time. Just a note that this is sort of the last class period that has topics for the exam. So so direct map caches are eligible to be on the exam. The topics from here will not be on the midterm. All right. Thanks, everyone. Sorry about the extra people. I don't know what happened. And then, yeah, if there were any additional questions, we'll try to handle next week or, of course, in office hours.